perfect.
Can we just call to order the Parks and Recreation Commission meeting for February 4th, 2014? And can we have a call to order? And Tina has an announcement.
The clerk's office is taking minutes in a different fashion. So when you guys make, after you make a motion and you vote, if you're voting nay, make sure it's clear that you're a nay. And then whoever makes the motion and then whoever seconds it, sometimes it's that second that's kind of difficult, but we'll want to make sure we clarify right at that point just because of the way they're doing the minutes now. So just as an FYI, if we slow you down a bit, that's why. Thank
Sounds
you.
Good. So we're going to start off with public comments. Do we have
no, any? Roll call.
Oh, we got to go back one. We have a roll call, and to make sure we have a quorum.
Chairperson Lehman. Vice Chairperson Long.
Here.
Commissioner Adams.
Here.
Commissioner Coburn.
Here.
Commissioner Cassiopeia.
Here.
Commissioner Curtis. Commissioner Kiever.
Here.
Commissioner McKenna.
Here.
A quorum's present.
And for the record, I did want to mention that Commissioner Curtis had notified us that she would not attend, so she's excused. Now, public comments. Okay. So item number one is action on approval of minutes. I think we have a couple different minutes from both November and December. And I don't think I had anything that needed correcting or needing updating. Does anybody else have anything that they'd like to bring up?
I would move that if there are no other corrections, that we approve the minutes from November and December as they are.
I'll second.
All right. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
And we're good with that. There's no nays, so no deliberation. So we're going on to item number two is modifications of the agenda. Is there anything on the agenda?
Mr. Chairperson, I don't have really any modifications to the agenda, but I do want to bring your attention to a little slip of paper I put in front of you prior to the meeting beginning. When we get to agenda item 3C, some things have been evolving on that particular agenda item since the staff report was written, and we have proposed recommended new language for a motion. I'll explain why when we get to that staff report, but I did want to bring that to your attention.
Okay. I thought you were just making it really easy on us to make the motion. We didn't have to fumble. So, but I like that anyway. That sounds good. So we're moving on to item number three with the meeting items. Item number A, or letter A, would be discussion only regarding the introduction of recreation program managers Scott Chapman and Jay Phillips. And this will be
While they're coming up here, I'd like to kick it off a little bit. You know, you see Vern Cron up here all the time, and you see Scott Fehrenbrook and myself all the time, obviously, and once in a while Juan Guzman, but it seems like we don't really get our recreation managers up here all the time or very often. And we have two new staff members, and Megan is going to introduce them and talk a little bit about what they do. They do some really good things for the city, some very important programs, working with our youth and conducting our sports programs throughout the city. They put in a lot of long hours and hard work in, and I think it's good for you to get to know these folks and hear what kind of important programs and what kind of important work they do. So, Megan, with that, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you. For the record, Megan Sirocco, Recreation Operations Manager. Thanks for having us. I do want to introduce Scott Chapman at the end. He's been with the Recreation Division since he was 15. He's a lifer, And when he was 15, he started out as a part-time employee with youth programs and transitioned into some work with the junior ski program and the sports programs. He was hired full-time in March of 2013 as the sports program manager and oversees the adult and youth sports programs, the Arlington Ice Rink, and assists with the Convention and Visitors Bureau's sports tournaments. And then we have Jay Phillips. He was hired, excuse me, in November of this year. He's from Knoxville, Tennessee. He came to us from there as the assistant recreation specialist for the youth programs. And so since I have taken the position as operations manager, he now oversees the before school, after school, summer camp programs, and break programs. And I think that he's going to really add some great new ideas and bring a fresh approach. So.
All right. Well, welcome. And, yeah, Jay made the trip across the country. So and a special welcome. And does anybody have any comments? Okay.
Thumbs up is always good. And then I think the next thing we wanted to briefly mention, just some of the recreation operations that are going on. Currently, we're wrapping up the ice rink, and so I think in March we'll kind of give a final report on that. And we also have contract classes that we oversee. Currently, we have 10 contracts in place. They offer exercise classes and different programs, Tai Chi, Jiu-Jitsu, roller derby, boot camp classes, Zumba. So we have a wide variety. And aside from that, the other project that we're working on is our ActiveNet, which is our online registration system for programs and reservations. And with that, we are implementing a new customer interface. I'm sure that system has come up in these meetings before, and that new customer interface will go into effect sometime this year when we have a low online enrollment period, and that will make that program much more user-friendly for the public. So those are the projects we've got going.
I just had a question. Mm-hmm. As far as most activities you mentioned, so we can all find them on, would it be Carson.org?
You can. That would be Carson.org/classes. And then you'll get the listing of all the classes, the schedules as well. That's continually updated with new scheduling, new classes, new contracts that we might get.
And is the active.net part of it something that we have access to immediately, or is that something they're still working on?
Well, ActiveNet, we've had that since May of 2011. But since then, we have not had any upgraded on the customer interface side, so what the public sees when they register. We've had comments that it's maybe not as user-friendly, and so we really want to make sure that we get that done, and we're working with ActiveNet currently to get that implemented. But we want to do that during a low registration time frame so we can, get the bugs out.
We also use ActiveNet for the reservation of our facilities as well. You two have anything you want to add?
I was just going to.
Yeah, Commissioner Cassioppo.
I just wondered, Scott, now you've been here, about a year now, are you planning on making any changes that we should be aware of, or what kind of tweaks, if you will?
I think at this point I'm going to just maintain the programs, but starting in the summer is when I'm going to start making new programs. I plan on making a dodgeball, both adult and youth, and then also a high school basketball league. I think at this point recreation sports lacks in the high school age the most, so I think if we can start offering some high school activities, that'd be huge. So.
Anybody else? Okay. Well, thank you.
Welcome to Carson.
You know, Megan mentioned that Scott has been working for us since he's 15, so he's...
Just last year.
Well... Sorry, I didn't mean to set you up, Scott. What I was going to say is that he's, you know, he's only about 5 years away from retirement now.
Okay, so we are moving on to item letter B.
Is there any public comment? Oh,
thank you. Any public comments regarding item A? No public comments. Moving on to item letter B, the discussion only regarding the 8 cent sales tax public hearing and the public infrastructure improvement projects public hearing. I believe it was last week. There was a couple kind of open houses where you could kind of explore what the projects got going on, and I'll turn it over to Roger for kind of an update.
Well, good. Thank you. Yeah, I did want to give an update on this process. As you know, the City Council is considering whether to adopt or approve a 1/8 cent sales tax, and the sales tax will, if funded or if approved by the board, will help fund four infrastructure projects throughout the city. One of them, of course, which is dear to our heart, is the MAC, and that would fund anywhere from $2.3 to $2.8 million. That would be the amount of money we need in addition to the $5.7 million that we have set aside through the Quality of Life program. And this would be for, as we've referred to in the past, the Big Mac. And the Big Mac is a 41,000-square-foot facility, roughly 41,000 square feet, that has two NCAA-sized basketball courts and then the elevated suspended walking track that's 1/10 of a mile in length up above that. The other projects include an animal shelter, and then the other two projects include enhancements, landscape enhancements, largely to the corridors coming into the city on North Carson Street, South Carson Street, and on Highway 50, William Street as well. The idea of making a more attractive community, kind of renovating the looks of Carson City, hopefully will attract more businesses and more people to the community. And then the last one is the improvements to the downtown Carson City, largely around Carson Street. And again, some traffic and aesthetics and landscaping improvements to downtown Carson City, Carson Street, and carried over a little bit to some of the side streets and Curry as well. That one probably, I don't want to say the most controversial, that might be true, but that'd be a little bit of a judgment call on my part, but probably the one that generates maybe some of the most common questions during the public hearings about whether that's going to be, whether the plan is to make it into a one-way street, or I mean, two-way street, one lane each direction, or to maintain the four lanes, whether there'll be widened sidewalks, whether there'll be parking downtown on Carson Street or not, whether parking be restricted. And so there's been a lot of interest regarding what the final outlook of that project might be if it's the 1/8 cent sales tax is approved and it's also included as a project to be funded by. But we did have, we have conducted three public hearings by city staff, largely department heads, headed up by Lee Plemmel, who is director of our planning. And the purpose of the public hearings were to inform the public about these projects, to solicit comments, and to answer questions about the proposed projects and the implementation of the 1/8 cent sales tax. The first two meetings were both held on January 21st, 2014, at the Fuji Park Exhibit Hall. First one was at 9 a.m. in the morning, and the second was at 2 p.m. The third meeting was held January 29th. At the community center at 6 p.m. The first two meetings lasted approximately 2 hours. The format was pretty much the same throughout the three meetings. The first hour of the meeting was kind of set aside to having stations, if you will, or exhibits set up for each one of the projects with appropriate staff staffing those projects to answer questions and take comments, kind of more of a free-form type of a presentation or program. And then the second was a little bit more formal, where we'd actually have people seated. We had microphones. We actually timed people's comments, but the public could come up forward on the microphone, ask questions or give comments about the projects, or ask questions about the implementation of the 1/8 cent sales tax. And the third one actually probably lasted a little bit longer than the 2 hours, but that was held, the informal exhibit area was held in front of the theater in the lobby area, made a really nice display area. And then the public comment period was held here in the Sierra Room, and that one was also televised as well. The others weren't televised because we don't have the infrastructure there, you know, of course, for televising at the exhibit hall. I think we had a pretty good turnout. I mean, we had it started a little bit slow the first session at 9 in the morning at the Fuji Hall on the 21st. We had about 31, I think, people show up. Some strong opinions were expressed during that meeting. And then the second meeting in the afternoon, we had about 52. And again, a lot of really good public input was gathered at that meeting. The one here on the 29th, I think exceeded, I haven't gotten a final count on that yet, but exceeded over 80 people, I believe. This room was pretty much full. We had people into the little mezzanine area as well. So it was a really good turnout. One of the things that we also did was we had written comment cards so people could fill out the cards and or take the cards and take them home and fill them out and mail those in as well. And then on top of that, on the city's website, you could access those comment cards on the city website as well to provide some input. So I think the city really kind of bent over backwards to try to encourage the public to come in and learn about the 1/8 cent sales tax, learn about these projects, and to voice their opinions and ask questions about the projects as well. In your agenda, in your packet, you'll notice that there's an Exhibit A, and that's really the flyer that was produced, that was handed out to the public to give them sort of a general information about the projects and the 1/8 cent sales tax. Exhibit B and C are basically the notice of public hearing, Carson City Board of Supervisors for the 1/8 of 1% sales tax, and Exhibit C is the notice of public hearing, City Board of Supervisors for the sales tax plan of expenditure. And these are going to be held in a public hearing at the February 20th Board of Supervisors meeting at 8:30 in the morning. And again, we want to encourage the public to come out and participate in that public hearing. That's really all I have. I'd be happy to try to entertain any questions that you may have. And I know some of you were at the meetings, and I appreciate the ones that were there showing up. It's good to see familiar faces sometimes. All the time, I should say.
So I just had a couple questions. I guess before I forget, one thing, carson.org/carsonplan 2014 is where we can go, and if anybody's listening on TV or whatever, but you can go there and find out more about the project. And I believe that they're still accepting comments, which there's a form on there that you can fill out and send them in. Is it until
tomorrow?
Through tomorrow, so through the 5th of February. So a couple kind of questions I had, or I guess it came up when I attended the open meeting was, I know one of the things that we've battled with the MAC Center has been costs. Every time we think we have enough, we go and it goes out to bid, and we don't have enough, and it kind of gets into that circular thing. And what kind of confidence do we have that if we were to enact the 8 cent increase, that when it goes out to bid, do we actually have the money for it? And then the second part of that would be funding for maintenance and those things. And I know Roger and I, we talked about it briefly as well. But maybe could you shed a little light on that?
There was a lot of question about the funding and of the project, the capital cost, and would the funding be enough to get to the Big Mac, you know, the extra funding from the 1/8 cent sales tax. And then people did ask questions about, well, how do you operate it after you build it? And those are great questions, you know, particularly the second question. The first question, what we explained to a lot of people were is that, you know, we're dealing with real-time information based on our consultants. As we've talked about in the past, we have construction managers delivery system on this one. So we're not going to be going out to bid. It's not going to be subject to low bid or, you know, to a bidding process. So the kind of the nice element of this project is that the construction manager is going to have to provide us with a guaranteed price on the project. So we've been working very closely with them. The Big Mac is about 60% designed. We probably have about maybe another 3 months or 4 months to finish the design on it if the tax is implemented and the project's approved. And so the Mac is probably further along in the design stage of any of the other projects. So we have a pretty good comfort level of what the project's going to cost at this point. So that's helped us quite a bit. And since we're further along, if these projects are approved, conceivably the MAC would be the first project that would be completed of the four. As far as the ongoing operation costs, we did a little budget a couple of years ago, and we've kind of gone back and fine-tuned it. But we're looking at anywhere from about $145,000 to about $165,000 a year to operate the facility. And that cost is kind of kept low because for the time being, and because of the nature of the type of facility, it's going to be primarily a programmable facility. You have kind of basically two type of facilities. You have drop-in facilities that are open a lot. You know, they may be open 100-plus hours a week, and people come in and use them anytime. That's really nice because it affords a lot of opportunity for people to use the facility, but there also is a cost that you have to have staffing there, you know, whenever it's open. Primarily, we're going to look at the MAC until maybe budgets improve and we can afford to make it, move it more into a drop-in use facility. It's going to be programmable, so it'll really only be open when it's being programmed. And that includes programs by the Boys and Girls Club, who's interested in using the facility as well. So that's going to help us reduce the cost of the project. One of the things that we've talked about is how can you strike a little bit of a balance between a drop-in facility and a programmable facility. And you can do that by actually programming, this sounds kind of crazy in a way, but programming drop-in use. And for instance, the elevated walking track might be an example of that. We may not have necessarily an organized activity going on, but we may say, between these hours, the walking track is open for people to come in and use it. But again, we'd have to staff it appropriately during that time. One of the things that we're considering, and I think that the staff is going to be looking into this in a little bit more detail in the next couple of months, and we'll be bringing a recommendation probably to the Park and Recreation Commission, and maybe that'll eventually go to the board too. It can't go further without your recommendation, your approval, and the board's approval ultimately. But one of the things we're considering is, do we need to start looking at the funding percentages that we have in the quality of life program? As you know, right now it's 40% for parks capital, parks and recreation capital. It's 40% for open space acquisitions and management, and it's 20% for maintenance. The existing ordinance that we have for quality of life allows a 2% tweak either way on those percentages. And so we're going to be looking at the prospects of, does it make sense to take advantage of that 2% tweak and maybe move more money into the maintenance portion of it and away from capital. And, you know, maybe if that's the case, maybe it even makes sense to amend the current ordinance to allow more of that. But that's just kind of we're just in the very exploratory stages of looking at that. The thought is that as the quality of life projects, the original projects that were on that list back in 1996 and 1997, as those projects get built, we may need to devote more money towards the maintenance of those projects and maybe less towards building future projects. But those are just ideas that we're in the early processes of evaluating.
Thank you, Roger. And does any commissioners have any comments? Commissioner Giever.
Hi, Roger. I've got two questions. First question is, worst case scenario, the sales tax increase doesn't pass. What happens to the future of the MAC? Do we just go with what we have? Do we forget it and shunt the money elsewhere?
That's a really good question. If it doesn't pass, we have $5.7 million. And I think at that point, we're going to come back and we're going to be meeting with, you know, with you folks, and we're going to talk about what is the direction we should go. You know, we could look at building what we can for $5.7 million, knowing that it's not going to have some of the, of course, ability to host tournaments and those type of things. It would be a much smaller center. But I think we need to evaluate whether we want to continue with that, or do we want to take the $5.7 million and make a recommendation looking at using it for another purpose. But, you know, if we get to that point, I think we do have to, it's going to be a very important discussion to have, and I think we have to look at what the original intent of the quality of life bond initiative was, initiative program, and take a look and see if those projects that were listed as projects that were considered to be projects that would be completed first is still being high priorities.
And my second question is, it's come to my attention that Douglas County is considering building a similar facility, only theirs will have the free showers, they'll have lockers, they'll have free weight rooms and such. So if that goes through, my question is, how would that impact what we do as far as designing the MAC, and then how would it impact our ability to hold tournaments? Do you think that it would draw tournaments away and thus decrease our revenue base? Do you have any thoughts?
Douglas County is actually building their facility. They're actually in the construction stage of it. And it's a little bit different facility. It's really a community center. And it also has a senior citizen center. It's got some administrative offices and that type of thing. It's a larger project than what we're looking at. Yet we're going to have a larger gymnasium area. And so I don't really think that it would harm our ability to attract tournaments or run programs out of our facility. I think they're really significantly different. It's not going to make any difference. Now, when it comes to running programs, you know, we're going to be offering programs to people that are basically residents of Carson City or live really nearby. They're going to be having, primarily a different set of customers down south, you know, about 10, 15 miles further south. So I don't think programs is going to make any difference. When it comes to tournaments, again, we have a larger gymnasium. I don't see them really being, you know, a threat to the ability of us having tournaments here. I don't see a lot of competition. In fact, there might be an opportunity that if we had a large indoor tournament of some type, we may be able to work with them and provide, you know, more gym space.
Was there ever, when the kind of studies were being done, looking at whether an NCAA court made sense, was there a rough dollar value of anticipated revenue that that would bring versus not having an official size court?
There really wasn't, and the reason there wasn't is we really don't have anything to fall back on in terms of history. You know, we haven't had that ability to have those type of activities and tournaments and programs in the community, so we don't really have a base to start with. But we do know that a large NCAA size court, and we'll have two of those, being overlaid by four high school sites, gives us a lot of flexibility to run a lot of different activity. You know, we can have four different events going on at one time, four different high school size basketball games, four different futsal games, you know, those type of things.
Commissioner Cassiopo.
Hey, in terms of maintenance, Roger, will the design incorporate the ability to section it off, if you will? You mentioned using the elevated track. Well, would you have the ability to say, if people are going to use the elevated track, that's the only portion of the facility they can get into, thus minimizing the need to clean the entire complex every time a portion of it's used?
There is the ability to section portions of the gymnasium off with drop curtains, but we really don't have the entryway going into the gymnasium is an open entryway. There aren't doors there. So you really can't close those and secure those. But you can kind of do other things there to get around it. For instance, if you have an early morning walking or running program, which are, you know, popular in a lot of places on the elevated walking track, you can keep the lights lower. So that there, you know, you still have to have lights on for the elevated walking track activity, but you can keep the lights lower so it's not really conducive to, you know, some type of play going on in the gymnasium, or we could kind of construct some temporary barriers, you know.
Commissioner Adams.
Thank you. If anybody has any doubt that the community kind of needs this program, they need to go by the Boys and Girls Club and see the good that they do. And, you know, we started this thing off with an agreement with the Boys and Girls Club. It would be so nice for those kids to have a nice warm place in the wintertime to go run, and the benefits that they provide to the community. And the other one would be to come down here when we're playing youth basketball down here in this building, or futsal, or the programs that go on in this building, and see how many people we've got jammed in this gymnasium right here in this building. And, you know, it's a great lifestyle thing for this community. I mean, it's there's a big need for more gymnasium space for the programs and for kids, and I mean the adult programs that are down here. You know, I've talked to, when I was talking to Joel Dunn one time, he was saying even when the when they're doing the futsal, the adult futsal in here, they've got families jammed in this place, and I never did make it down here to see that, but I mean it's like a sardine can in here sometimes when they got that stuff going on. This is a, you know, a thing that would be great for our community, and I just ask everybody to kind of keep that in mind and when they're thinking about this, and really, you know, it's a quality of life issue, definitely, for the Carson City area. And I really wish everybody keep that in mind when they're thinking about this.
And I'd like to kind of follow up on some of those comments. I appreciate those, Chuck. Scott, when he was up here, Scott Chapman mentioned that one of the things he'd like to do is move into high school programming, you know, programming events and sports and that type of thing for the high school students, who we really don't serve very well at all. And high school has very little, it has really no athletic programs outside of their varsity and junior varsity sports for the kids. And so this facility would allow us to do that. It allows us to have a place where we could have offer those type of programs for the high school kids who we really aren't serving. And you're right, the futsal type activities are a family event. I mean, whole families come down for those events, and it's very well attended. We get a lot of people. But one of the things I forgot to mention that came up during the third public hearing was several people got up and mentioned the need for cultural type of improvements as well. And as you know, we have the Bob Boldrick Theater here, and we're heavily involved in the cultural and arts programming as well, and facilitating those type of activities. Back in the Park and Recreation Master Plan that was conducted in 2005 and I think adopted in 2006, one of the recommendations was to explore the feasibility if a new recreation center or facility was constructed, to look at the possibility of expanding the theater into the current gymnasium. And that came up during the meeting. And that's something that we have to take a look at. And I think that caught the attention of some of the Board of Supervisors members who were in the audience at the time. Now, what we have to look at is, are we going to be able to give up a gymnasium because we're building a bigger gym? You know, conceivably, we're still going to need this gymnasium at the community center run those programs. The other thing that we have to consider is that Megan and Jay use the gymnasium extensively for some of our youth enhancement programs, for our before school activities and our summer camp activities as well. So it's an important facility for them as well. But there's an opportunity that we can take a look at that and look at the feasibility of how we can enhance this community center too, by making some changes to the current gymnasium. And I think the board is interested in that concept.
With our agreement with the Boys and Girls Club, does that include any of the maintenance and upkeep during the day at all?
To be perfectly clear, we don't have an agreement yet at this point. You know, we've talked to them about several different agreements. We've looked at several different versions of agreements. They're definitely interested in entering into a facility use agreement with us of some nature to use that facility. And some of the things we've talked about them is that they providing not only the supervision during their use of that facility, but also the maintenance that it requires as well.
I just wanted to kind of piggyback on Commissioner Adams. You know, I've, for a number of years, I've played in the Adult Futsal League. And I can tell you that when they schedule the area we have, games start at 8 o'clock in the morning and they go till 10 o'clock at night. And it's back-to-back games. And that's one sport alone. And then you throw on basketball and everything else that goes in there. This weekend, we were here for dance when you talk about performing arts. They had a dance competition here, and that occupied the entire theater and the entire gymnasium because the kids needed places to change. So we certainly are splitting at the seams, if you will, with this community center. So obviously we want the money to work out, and we need money to build something, and we need money to maintain it. But as far as, it, like you said, if there's whether or not there's a question for the need, there certainly is a need and a desire in the community.
I was curious also, would the drop-in type walking track or just to drop in to play basketball, is there a cost associated with that for the public, or is that just a free service at that point to the public?
That's another really good question. That hasn't been completely sorted out this time. There's a couple different ways that we're looking at doing that. One would be the programs themselves. For instance, we had an adult basketball program or, you know, whatever in there, that there would not be a fee to use the facility, but there would be a portion of the registration fee could be used to offset, you know, some of the cost of the facility. That's one way we can look at it. If you had, even if you had a walking program, you could have a registration fee for that walking program, and then a portion of that would go towards offsetting the cost of the facility. The other option is actually charging a fee at the door, you know, an admission fee. That option, oops, excuse me, sorry about that. That option works really well for my son in Montana. That option works really well for recreation centers that have, you know, largely drop-in use type of facilities. And as the facility may move into that type of operations, then we'd probably take a look at doing that. And then on top of that, one of the things we hadn't really discussed is that this facility can be used for other type of activities above and beyond, you know, athletics and sports too. It could also be used as a, you know, as a large community center that can host community-wide events, you know, exhibitions, exhibits, flea markets, craft fairs, you know, those type of activities too.
Any other comments? All right, public comments.
Hi, C.K. Bailey. I've got use for that $5 million if you don't. Bailey Lake, we can cave in Topsy Lane on it or something. Okay, all fun and games aside, this is sounding very interesting, and I really believe that in my heart that this is a good deal. I'm going to bring back the thought, since it's in engineering mode, what was it, at 60%? Okay. The chillers, the AC. If you want to talk about zoning, zone it. Helical gear screws. Four chillers, I guess it's 414A, refrigerant. The maintenance of that facility, and I don't mean mop and bucket, although that really comes into play, but we're talking the most expensive part of the pie, of the energy pie, and that is HVAC. Okay, you're going to have a lot of heat to offset in that building in the summer. And I think with what is available today in reality as far as economical means, or more economical means of lighting, zones, and HVAC zones, heating and air, that a very special focus should be placed on those items specifically, because that's where a big piece of your pie, after this baby's built, is going to take place. And I think it really needs to be scrutinized heavily. There's a lot of brand new, gosh, I was just looking at LEDs. I know they're costly now, but they won't be for always. And there's lighting, heating, cooling will come and bite you worse than anything else. And that's my take, is that that should be looked at very significantly. Thank you very kindly.
Commissioner Keever.
Roger, based on CK's comments, I have a question regarding the power and the energy for the MAC. Have we given any thought to maybe using solar power or something to offset traditional, or were we going to go all traditional?
We talked about the possibility of using solar power, and we've chosen not to go that route simply because of the upfront costs involved in it, changing the way the roof structure is designed and that type of thing. And we're not convinced that the payback is there at this time, you know, for a facility of that nature. So we're looking more at traditional means, and CK is exactly right. Lighting, heating, and cooling of that facility will be the largest single cost. And just making sure that you have proper air movement throughout the facility is very important.
Commissioner Cassioppo.
Again, on that, I was thinking of the same thing, sustainability and whatnot. With lighting, you know, the school district has done some good things with, you know, basically natural lighting coming in. Carson Middle School is a good example. And I don't know where we're at with design, but if it makes sense financially, if we can bring in some of that natural lighting through the roof or other means, I mean, there's systems in place that not only bring it in but distribute it, and they're fairly effective. The cost, of course, like you said, sometimes goes up initially, but if we have, you know, reasonable paybacks, it's just something to look into as we go through the design.
And CK, I just wanted to thank you for your comments as well. All right. Moving on to item letter C. To recommend to the Board of Supervisors to approve the submittal of Recreational Trails Program grant for the extension of the North Freeway Multi-Use Path between Highway 50 East and East 5th Street. And this is going to be Vern.
Thank you. For the record, Vern Cron, Park Planner. City staff is looking very seriously at trying to extend the existing multi-use path that is along the north leg of the freeway further south. We've identified that in the master plan. The exhibits that I gave to you this evening is a more refined route that we have developed through a series of studies. That study was here a number of years ago to the Parks and Recreation Commission to look at. So working with our public works folks, we are trying to put together a series of grant funding sources that will allow us to take the path, the existing path that goes along Highway 50. There's a multi-use path sidewalk that runs out Highway 50 near the intersection of just on the east side of the freeway on Highway 50. We would head south, basically paralleling the freeway corridor, taking it down to the linear park. That's, again, that's in your packet that shows you the route. It's the red route in your packet. Current or preliminary estimates on that are over $1 million to make that happen. This is a paved multi-use path, and so we have to, you know, look for fairly large numbers of grant opportunities. One of the things that happens, which is unfortunate, but it does, is when you put together your staff report and then things move along quickly, which they happen to do. So since the staff report was developed and written and distributed, a number of things have happened. We had the opportunity to meet with Jenny Scanlon at Nevada State Parks. They're the organization that administers the Rec Trail program. We had some opportunities to meet with her. in this quest to find funds. We've also worked with our Public Works Department staff. They've been looking at different grant opportunities that might present itself. And so what we are here tonight to talk to you about is these two different grant opportunities. The Rec Trail Grant, potentially we could apply for. Their maximum amount that we can go after is about $200,000. The nice thing about the Recreational Trails Grant is it's an 80-20 match. So if we would be looking at a $200,000 grant from them, we'd have to come up with $40,000. That's something that we think is, even in these tight budget times, we think we can do that. The other thing that we're looking at, and this is on the public works side, is going after what's called, let me make sure I get this term right, I always mess these things up if I don't look at them, is what's called a TAP grant. It's a Transportation Alternatives Program grant. They can apply for up to $650,000 worth of funding. The nice thing about that particular federal grant source is that it's a 95-5 match. So, again, a very good use of local match dollars to bring in a large amount of federal funds that would go toward this project. The intent behind the project is to basically connect the paths. They don't have to be paved. Our philosophy is let's get a path from Highway 50, which is existing, and get that route, and based on the exhibit in your packet, down to the linear park path. And then we will pave as much of it as we can. But we don't believe that even with the $650,000 and potentially the $200,000 from Rec Trails would get us all the way there. But the important issue is connectivity, and that's what we'd be after with this. We have been working. Jeff Sharp, who is city engineer, helped us put together some easements through along with NDOT. We've been working strongly with NDOT to get easements through their property, as well as through some developmental property that was happening at the corner of the southwest corner of Highway 50 and Lompa Lane. There's the new gas station that's gone in there. We've been working with the developer to get an easement behind those parcels to get down to the Arez family property, which we've been talking with them about. And they are certainly open to letting the city have buying an easement or buying the land from them to connect our path all the way down. So all the pieces are in place. So what we're looking at tonight is some new, and part of the reason we proposed this new recommended action item or language is that Public Works is going to be approaching Regional Transportation Commission for permission to go forward for their TAP grant program. The way it sequences, each grant program has a little different requirement in order to apply for a grant. The Recreational Trails Program grant is very stringent upon what we have to have in place before we can apply. We have to have the route. We've got to go through a historical and cultural clearance process in order before we even apply for the grant. So that has to be done prior to grant even submittal. We have to have, and in some cases we want to be using some of these properties that we've acquired, the NDOT property as well as this developer's property, as match. Well, they need official appraisals on those properties to act as match against the grant. And then of course we actually need to have the trail corridor across the Arez family's property in hand before we apply. So we came to a quick, stark realization that wasn't going to happen between now and March 7th. So the new plan is to let the Public Works folks apply for their TAP grant. That'll be coming out shortly. They're thinking in the next month or two that grant cycle will open. They will apply. And then we will follow in behind. By the time they get their grant process through, get partway through the design, and then we would be able to apply in the next grant cycle, because we'll be working on getting these three things in place to then apply in next year's grant cycle to add an additional $200,000 to the project. So anyway, that's kind of the sequencing of how this is all going to work for us, and we're excited about this opportunity. Everything seems to be falling in place for it. So we wanted to just share that with you this evening and hopefully get a recommendation. And that's why we changed it, because of kind of the new sequencing that we're looking at, because of these meetings with state parks and with public works staff. That's why we've actually asked for a recommendation not only to the Board of Supervisors, but also to the Regional Transportation Commission, that this commission would support the application of various grants to accomplish this project. And so we reworded that. This recommended language has been passed by the DA's office. Tina is very comfortable with it, that we are in keeping with in the intent of the actual posted agenda item. So she feels good about that. So we've tried to cross that bridge as well. So at this point, would there be any questions about what we're proposing and kind of the plan over the next year that we're going to go after these grants in the process?
Commissioner Adams.
On at state parks, or state trails, parks, whatever the heck it is, grant, can we match volunteer effort and time and effort on that?
Yes, absolutely. That could be done as an in-kind labor match. Absolutely.
Other comments? I just had one. It's more, obviously, we're just in the grant process and that, but what would be the feasibility of putting either a bridge or a tunnel over under Highway 50 where it crosses 50 to go north, I guess? Is that something that is cost prohibitive or is something...
That's an interesting question. I hadn't thought about that. It is something we could certainly look into, but the study that we did, everything was going to be an at-grade facility, so we were not looking at trying to do anything under Highway 50. I know there's an interesting, I mean, that would avoid a lot of automobile and pedestrian conflict issues at the light. I think staff's position, though, is that since we are crossing people at a light, that it's a facility, when you start talking about a facility of that nature and the expense related to that, and then we do have actually a traffic light signal that we're having the paths come to, we feel that's a safe enough facility related to the cost expense of putting a tunnel under the road. If we were looking at crossing a busy highway, mid-block crossing, or somewhere where there wouldn't be a simple and safe crossing, that might be something to consider. But I think in this location, the cost-benefit ratio, I'm not sure, works for us.
Okay, yeah, I know just to the north of that, where it crosses College, I think it's College Parkway, at that area there. For me, I've been through that intersection several times, and it's always been, I guess you can call it a disconnect in my mind, but that's just because maybe it's an inconvenience to me. But it would be nice if it would be uninterrupted to cross both those kind of major, I guess, roads. So. Mm-hmm. All right. Commissioner Adams.
I do know that when I was watching some of that get built, some of the plans and stuff that I seen go through there, and just from having been around the community for so long, that the drainage and stuff that goes underneath that bypass and down Russell Way there is, I mean, there's some large storm drains and stuff underneath there, so getting underneath that would probably not be too cost prohibitive.
Part of the William Street Highway 50 that goes to the west is definitely under NDOT control. And it would be at their discretion. As far as going to the east back towards the gold dust, I don't know how far NDOT's control extends into that, but it would be an NDOT matter most likely to put anything under that road, not a Carson City matter. And I will guarantee you they won't do it because they probably end up having to pay for it.
All right, any other comments? Public comments? Okay, moving on to item number 4.
This is
action. Oops, we do have an action. Anybody want to make a motion?
Okay, agenda item 3C, I move to recommend to the Board of Supervisors and to the Regional Transportation Commission to approve the submittal of a grant or grants for the extension of the North Freeway multi-use path between Highway 50 East and East Fifth Street.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And no nays.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Okay, now we are ready, I think, for item number four, staff updates for discussion only. An update on the Nevada State Fair construction project at Carson City Fairgrounds in Fuji Park.
I wanted to share with the commission some of the projects that staff is working on related to the Nevada Fair, but also I want to have the commission keep in mind too that a lot of the improvements, and it's staff's intent that all the improvements will be something that will facilitate the use of the facility for not only the fair but into the future. So the staff, and we've had discussions about the fairgrounds, and maybe it's not quite the economic engine that it could be. Some of these improvements that we're looking at that are associated with the fair, staff believes that will be good selling points for future rental of the facility and maybe attracting other events to the venue that we have down there. So I just was going to go down the list. We have six, actually, projects that are have funding for and are currently underway. And we also have four projects that are in the planning stages that still may yet occur between the fair starts. The fair is August 30th through August July 30th through August 3rd is when the fair is going to be. The fairground maintenance building, we've had this discussion at this commission before. We have gone through the design process, put it out to bid, and it will be in front of the Board of Supervisors on Thursday for contract award. We were able to get a good bid. It came within budget, and we were able to go forward with not only the lowest responsible bidder, but also with a 10% contingency. So we're really excited about that opportunity to get Scott a maintenance building down at the fairgrounds. That's been something that he has been desperately wanting, and with the fair coming and possibly other bigger venues, actually having a facility to store equipment and materials and other kind of things for the complex is a lot more cost effective instead of having people run back and forth across town and pick up trucks to get stuff at the corporate yard and then take it back down there. So we think there'll be a staff benefit to staff efficiency as well. Basically what we're getting for the price is we're getting a shell maintenance building. And then we're hoping to be able to be real conservative regarding change orders and other things. It's a simple project. So we're hoping that if we don't use all of our contingency money and there'll be money left over, that we would be being able to put some other building electrical components to the building and also maybe some shelving improvements to help. So hopefully that'll all come together. The Fairgrounds Arena Plaza Picnic Shelter Project, this project is... this picnic shelter is a 30 by 50 foot shelter being installed at the east end of the plaza at the fairgrounds. We are currently out to bid. They will open bids on February 20th. So we're really excited and hopeful regarding that particular project. We figure that will give the opportunity, depending on how the fair sets up, if there are going to be vendors there, this gives them a great opportunity to have a shade structure for the participants to have picnic tables underneath and to eat there in shade. And in July and August, it's probably a good thing. We're also looking at the design of the shelter to be a secondary venue for possibly bands. The design is set up so that if a band or some sort of event wanted to happen underneath, that is kind of a staging area. We're going to have power there for it and some other things. Again, if we get good bids, we would like to be able to buy some picnic tables for the shelter. Currently, there's not enough money in the budget that we have funded right now for the project to get us picnic tables. We're working on that. The fairgrounds, Fuji Park electrical infrastructure improvements, we have been having multiple conversations with the fair manager about what she needs and the priorities associated with that. And next week, we'll be getting together with Marina Works and the fair manager to refine where we're going with that. So the idea behind that is providing additional infrastructure for the electrical needs for the tents that are going to have to be down there. They're going to house small animals, other types of lighting and safety improvements, possibly doing some other improvements for vendors, so we'll have the ability to have electrical services for a lot more vendors than we typically have had down there in the past, and that's intended to help facilitate the fair. The Costco Fuji Park Water Intertie Project, we've had that here before the commission as well. They are working very hard and stringent on the plans. They're real close to being done. They want to go out to bid, I believe, at the end of the month and have that project all wrapped up before the fair starts. Confidence is high there. We have Clear Creek interpretive signs. We've been working with the Carson Water Subconservancy District on getting some interpretive signs related to the Clear Creek watershed. We have those. We are hoping to, matter of fact, I just got confirmed that the Armsby Sportsmen's Association and I are working on a work day down there March 22nd. And what they're going to do for us is they will, and so the city staff's not going to have to do this, but we have the interpretive signs. They will put those signs in for us. They will also do some landscape bed as a part of the workday project. They'll also do some landscape bed renovation, as well as working with Trip Plastics to replace the plastic windscreens on the existing picnic shelter down there. If you haven't been down there, the picnic shelter was put in about 10 years ago. Over the years, the wind panels, which were clear at the time we put them in, have faded to a real non-translucent color. And so Trip Plastic, I don't know how the Armsby Sportsmen's Association pulled this off, but they're going to donate all the plexiglass. We'll take those off and we'll put the new ones on, and they're going to do it as a donation. And so that's really going to be nice. That's an area that we've tried real hard to kind of keep those translucent panels as clear as we can, and they've just faded over time. So this is a real good thing that's going to happen there with that. We also are working on one of the things that when you're inviting the public to come to a facility, we are in the process now of getting estimates for some directional signs so that when you're driving down Clear Creek Road, you'll know you'll be able to take the first entrance. We'll get you into the fairgrounds, into the Bailey Pond. The next entrance gets you to the Fuji Park and the Exhibit Hall. And the third entrance down gets you to the Dog Park and the west end of Fuji Park. It just helps when you're bringing people in off of 395 who are visitors. We've been having that. That's been some criticism we've received regarding I don't know where to go in the park when I want to go to events or things are doing that. So we're working on that. So those things we have money for and we're moving ahead on, and the intent is to have all that in place before the fair, actually before July 1st. We want to try to have all the construction wrapped up before July 1st, then giving the park a little bit of time for us to set up and deal whatever last minute things we need to do for the fair. One of the other things that we're in the process of doing is that we have applied for an NCOT grant. It's a $20,000 NCOT grant for a sign for the fairgrounds. We do not have an event sign down there. Many, many years ago it was taken down and just because it was old and not good. So we want to do a sign that's eventually going to get us to an LED reader board down there. We just don't have the money right now to go completely, but we can get a nice monument sign down there that we can get banners on and also provide some directional sign saying that this is a complex with the fairgrounds and a dog park and a fishing pond and those kind of things. Oh, NCOT, I'm sorry, thank you. NCOT is it's an acronym, and it's for the Nevada Commission on Tourism. One of the things that they do is every 2 years they have construction projects that they will fund or help fund or assist in funding, and they're very big into signs. And so that's part of the reason that we applied for this particular grant. We felt we had a good opportunity with it. This is also the same funding source that got us our new scoreboards up at John D. Winter Centennial Park. So this is they're a good group of folks over there. They understand the aspect of signage and other amenities to increase tourism, and they're just a good group of folks to work with. I'm hopeful that we will fare well. They have around $200,000 and the number of applicants throughout the state to try to distribute the money between. So hopefully we'll be well considered. One of the other things that we're looking at, matter of fact, I was talking with Tom Grundy this morning, or this afternoon actually, about part of one of the improvements for the fair is an animal washing station. The way the fair layout is going to be put together is that the small animal tents, these would be for the pigs and for the smaller cows and the rabbits and the chickens, they're going to be put in tents at the west end of the fairgrounds in the dirt area. And so as a part of the showing aspect of these animals, they are usually cleaned and brushed and clippered and all that kind of stuff. And so we're
clippered, yes.
Clippered. They are clippered. They are clipped. Yeah, yeah, he didn't. but they use clippers to make them look nice, okay? Clippered. So anyway, we have to throw me off my game. So anyway, there'll be an animal washing station that Public Works is going to be putting in over there as an amenity that will help facilitate the showing of the animals. One of the things that we're looking at, we believe we have enough money for the fairgrounds. The plaza down there by the fairgrounds, by the grandstand, is dirt. It's never really a fun experience to be down there trying to eat your food and the wind's blowing and you're getting dirt in your food. So we believe we found somewhere gleaning the budget's material costs for possibly landscaping the plaza, but we're going to be using, hopefully, and I think we've got some real good opportunities here, for work days down at the fairground, volunteer work days. And so we're going to be talking to the Grace Work folks. This is an organization that last year put together like 20 projects all over town. About five or six churches get together, and their congregations go out on a Sunday, and they do community service projects. And instead of going to church that day, they end up actually doing wonderful things for the community. And we were fortunate enough last year to have two projects happen on our facilities. They painted the maintenance building out at the Governor's Field Complex for us. That was an adventure unto itself. They did a great job for us. They did it in two shifts. They had a morning shift and an afternoon shift, but they got it all done. And then we had them clean up the linear park ditch. Every year, over the winter, we just get a lot of stuff and trash blown into the linear park, and so they went down through there. This year, we're trying to focus. Staff has decided that any group that comes to us that wants to be a part of a cleanup or a work day, we're going to focus them down at the fairgrounds and at Fuji Park to help staff get ready for the fair. And so we're hoping that through this effort, we can maybe through a couple weekend projects, volunteer efforts can be done to plant the plants, put the irrigation system in, rock the plaza, that kind of stuff. So that's where our focus is going to be. And that's really what number four is that we work a lot with Rob Fellows over at Public Works on these things. And we've asked Rob also if he's got folks that want to come in and do some efforts. There's some stuff they can do down in the Clear Creek Stream Environment Zone to clean it up, open it up a little bit more, just to not only to renovate or bring more health back to the Stream Environment Zone, but just to kind of clean it up down there for us as well. So I'm not sure I made my 15 minutes. Roger said I was supposed to do this in 15 minutes. So I'm not sure I made it. I wasn't keeping track. But that's the intent. That was the intent to kind of share with the commission kind of the focus of what staff, both Public Works staff and Parks and Recreation staff, are going to be trying to do to get the facility ready for the fair, but also to look down the road a little bit further to make sure that anything we do is not going to be a throwaway. You know, there's a lot of tax dollars involved here, and we want to be able to put in facilities thoughtfully planned out so that if the fair does return, they can be reused again and set up in such a way that other venues can come in and use it. So that's staff's intent. It's not to have anything that we put in down there as a kind of a redo or a repeat. That's not our intent. So if I can answer any questions, I'd be glad to.
All right. Well, thank you, Byrne. Commissioner McKenna.
When Bodine's gave us the $1 million to put in the northeast parking lot, I thought the agreement was that we shared, and if we had a large production, that we could use Bodine's parking lot to do. So has somebody coordinated with them to make sure that they don't get surprised and angry after that. So.
They've had a representative from Bodine's that's been involved on the fair committee. So they should be well aware that when the fair is going to be, but we will make sure that they know that.
Commissioner Kiefer.
Hey, Vern. Is there any funding available for any of these projects through the Nevada Sesquicentennial Commission?
Good question. We can certainly look into that. We'll look into it. I'll make some phone calls. Oh, she may have already just...
I don't know.
She has looked into that? Okay. All right. We are listed, from what I know, we are listed as a signature event. The fair is listed as a signature event. So we do have that marketing opportunity through that sesquicentennial event. Roger, you might know more about this than I do.
Not much more, but Tina reminded me that Marina Works has checked into that, and I think they have a very limited to almost no budget for capital projects, but they are willing to sanction the event, endorse it, and help market the event.
All right, well, thank you. Any other comments? Public comments.
Hi, C.K. Bailey once again. I can't pronounce it, the Sesquicentennial, was that close? 150 years, the 150? Okay, well, Bailey Pond happens to be already in that, so... when that comes up, there, Scott, who is the kingpin of it over at Tourism, I believe it is, that's already on the books. And as far as endorsements like that, so that can go with if you want to use that. That one's already done. Very curious about the electrical. I'll talk to you offline about that, but that sounds very exciting to me as a potential. The interpretive signs, fantastic. This sounds really, really good. I'll use another agenda item or a non-agenda item. I'll use a public comment to do my last. So thank you very much.
Yes. Just one more question.
Yes.
How much of this work that's being done is going to be available after the fair? Is it this just a one-shot deal and it's used up, or will any of this be available for future projects and people just general use?
Yes, that's the intent. We're looking at least currently, we're looking at the fair as a potential repeat coming back, as well as any other venues that might come into the fair. For example, some of the lighting we're looking at, I think, will enhance the facility. We're looking at other types of electrical services. The NCOT grant, if we get that, that'll be something that can be used. So the intent is that these are all going to be capital improvements that will facilitate other events. So did I get your question, John?
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that it got out there that we're not just trying to get the fair, but we're trying to improve the park.
Excellent. That's a very good point. That's an excellent point. I'm sorry. I cut you.
That's right. It is a good point, and I'd like to point out that in the first category, groups that Vern mentioned, items 1 through 6, many of those are actually facilities that are included in the original master plan for the fairgrounds and for the park that we just didn't have the funding available to do at the time we finished the fairgrounds and completed that project. And the other thing I wanted to mention, John, kind of along the lines with your question, is we have a lot of other special events and activities going on down at Fuji Park all summer long, spring through the fall. Car shows, we have a lot of dog shows. It seems like we have weekly dog shows down there. And, of course, we'd like to attract other type of livestock equestrian type events as well. So everything we're doing here is going to help enhance all those other events.
Any other comments?
Yeah, my name is Robert Glenn, and I just want to voice my support for the fair and all the things you're doing for it. I think it's going to be a great event for Carson City. You mentioned a lot of different organizations volunteering to help out with some of these projects. And I just want to offer a suggestion. There's a lot of the various organizations at the different schools require public service mm-hmm. and volunteer hours. Specifically, I'm thinking of, say, National Honor Society at the high school, and I know that a lot of those students are always struggling to get that requirement done before the school year is over. Yeah. You might want to consider teaming up with the high school and speaking out to the national, talking to the National Honor Society to get additional volunteers for any of these projects.
And to follow up on that, we've had over the years, actually, we've had a great relationship with their ROTC program. Their ROTC program, and I don't know if that's happening this year. We've just kind of let them do their own thing. But they'll come over as an activity and actually walk through Mills Park, pick up trash, do those kind of things. I don't know if they've done it this year, but we've done it with them for the past three or four, five now, I think. And, they basically are told if you want to bring the young men over and young women over and pick up trash in Mills Park, knock yourself out. It's just an activity they can do, pick up their service hours, and they don't require transportation. They just walk across the street, and it's a great benefit for us. So we'll reach out to the National Honor Society. Thank you.
Okay. So I think we're moving on to item number five, announcements and requests for information. Is there anything... anything you'd like to report? And if not, we'll look at a report from school board liaison.
I have a question. You don't mind?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to ask Roger for an update on the potential members to be appointed to this board. Do we have any indication whether we're going to have new appointees soon or what's going on with that?
Well, Thursday afternoon at the Board of Supervisors meeting, they're going to be interviewing candidates for the Park and Recreation Commission.
And we have how many openings?
I think we have three to fill.
Okay.
I think we have nine applicants.
Good.
Sean Lehman is going to be out of town. I think he's going to try to do an interview over the phone, maybe. I'm not sure.
Sean will be in the wilds of Guatemala, not anywhere near anything electronic. And what I would like, what I hope happens, if the supervisors can't appoint him with him not there, is to carry over his position. The rule is that incumbents are allowed to apply for one additional term, and they are fairly well guaranteed that if they have good attendance and that sort of thing. So I would hate to lose Sean, and I would like Roger, if you can be there to be Sean's advocate, I would appreciate that. The list is public record as part of the agenda. If there's anybody on that list that you like or don't like, let me know. But we'll try and fill out the Parks and Recreation Commission with a diverse group that will make Carson City better.
All right. Let's see. Commissioner Cassiopo, do you have anything to report for the school board?
Just a couple of quick things. The Carson School District has, as I think most people know, have gone through great lengths to generate a strategic plan, and part of that strategic plan is community partnerships. And they've worked with getting our feet under us, if you will, of getting the hospital involved, the community college involved, certain portions of the city government involved. And the purpose is trying to get students an understanding of what's going on in the community, where, after their education, their lives can go. And it's a question. I don't know if you've been approached yet in terms of partnering with the schools and through internships or volunteer efforts or whatnot, if there's anything formal that's happened. But if not, I'd like to kind of maybe open up Parks and Rec to that possibility.
Yeah, we're definitely interested in participating in that.
Okay. No, that'd be great. And then just information and I'll call it a plea, but I won't actually ask for any. What we're trying to do with the track and field is put up a new scoreboard, an electronic scoreboard. It's going to actually have I hesitate to say Jumbotron. It'll be more like a Largetron. you won't be larger than life, but anyway, my understanding, we're going to get a report at I think it's the next school board meeting on where we're at with that pursuit. But I know I believe, had enough money in place to purchase it. I don't know if it's been purchased yet, but we don't have the money to construct it, to put it in place. And so we're working on efforts to get that in place. And if anyone's interested, wants to learn more about it, knows anybody that maybe could help in some obvious manners, that might be an interesting school board meeting to go to. That's all I have.
And with the goal of that, I believe we had the state track meet this year. Would the goal be to have that built by then?
The original goal was to have it built for the state track meet. As most of you know, we haven't had a usable track for a long time until we built this one. And now we have this fantastic track facility that is arguably one of the best in the state.
Where is it?
Oh, at the high school, the track that goes around the football field.
Okay.
So we now have an artificial turf football multi-use field. We can play soccer and football on it, and then we have a track that goes around it, and the track is now all, for lack of a more technical term, kind of has the rubber, the rubberized surface on it, and we can run meets on it. And this year, we're holding the state track meet there, and the original goal was to have that board up in time for it. Don't know if that's going to happen, but we're still trying.
All right. Thank you, Joe.
Sure.
Item number six is future agenda items. Does anybody have anything they'd like to add to the agenda? Commissioner Adams.
After our last meeting when we had our discussion about the Empire Ranch Golf Course and the effluent water, I had a aha moment on the way home thinking, and it might be just my aha, I don't know if anyone else would think it was a great idea, but for years we've had the East Course out here, which is kind of my kind of golf course. It's nice and flat and fairly easy to play on, and I'm quite the hacker, so I enjoy that course a lot. But I'm sitting there thinking, if would we be interested in talking about probably doing something with the master plan for Centennial Park, using that for a state fair type site, fairgrounds type area, and then taking, if we end up with Empire Ranch, turning that into a more of a, beginner type course. And I was thinking, driving out Highway 50, it's got great access out there. There's plenty of room. We could come up with parking. We could come up with, I realize it's kind of a pie in the sky future type thing, but I can't think of a better site in all Carson City for a large scale fairgrounds area to look at for the future. So that was just something that came to my mind, and I thought I'd bring it up and see if we wanted to talk about that on the.
Yeah, I would check that. I would say hold on to that thought. If that Empire Golf Course becomes city property, and if it's used as a recreation facility, any idea is a legitimate idea. And it has been thought about, if you took golf off, would you take golf off that site, or would you take it off the Eagle Valley site and leave golf there? So, and then what would be the use of the other facility? So, yeah, any idea right now is a good idea.
The commissioner or the commission for the fairgrounds might want to think of that. Like I said, I think that location would be best. If we went to Empire Ranch, then you'd be going through residential and all that stuff. It wouldn't be a good site. But
have Have you heard any kind of update on Eagle Valley, and would it be worth putting that on the agenda for next meeting?
Eagle Valley or Empire?
I'm sorry, Empire.
We want to come back with you and address that subject with you again. I'm not sure it'll be ready at the next meeting. We'll wait to have the appraisal done, and part of the appraisal is going to be an evaluation of the best and highest use of that facility. So I think maybe after that's done, then we'll bring it back to you. But I don't think it's going to be ready for you in March.
Sounds good. Any other items that we'd like to add? Okay. Public comments.
See how much fun I'm having here with all of you. Joe, there is a new course that you may or may not be aware of that is occurring at Carson High School, and that is called the National Fishing in the Schools Program. You're aware of it. The last name of the nice lady who is going to be, in fact, actually the chemistry teacher, the gentleman, they're a pair on this thing.
Is that Mr. Quartermeyer?
No, but it's okay. There are now some four schools ranging from Fallon to Lyon County, Churchill County, Carson City County that are going to be taught fly fishing in a very consistent methodology and a rather costly one to the schools. It's a national program, and it's now come to Carson City, and I just wanted to make this body aware of it. It is a phenomenal program. Trout in the Classroom starting up again for the year. That's I think I've got six classrooms ranging from here to Lyon to Story County to Virginia City. But National Fishing in the Schools program is coming, and it's like starting in a couple of weeks. So keep your eyes open for it. It's going to be pretty exciting. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Any other public comments? Do we have anybody moving on to item 8? Anybody want to make a motion to adjourn?
I make the motion that we adjourn.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Meeting adjourned.
Sorry.